Right, well, good evening, and it is my privilege to be here for the second time, and what a wonderful place you live in. This is a beautiful part of the United States of America. Just one quick question, did you manage to find the sacred blanket?
The sacred blanket was set upstairs with okay. Someone else, but yeah, I was told it was there.
Okay, I've got two young girls, Eva and Olivia, and a two-year-old boy, Kai, and another little two-year-old boy who's going to be nearly 2 weeks old next week, Monday. So our lives are very full at the moment with kids. And we've come up here this weekend to come and share with you, and we're excited about that. And this evening, my topic this evening is going to be one that's of great significance both to myself and my wife, because we get to do a lot of work at universities and also at high schools, both here in the United States and when we're in South Africa as well, where we get to speak to young people about the Christian faith and what can happen at these institutions when you go to study there. As a Christian, you would go to these schools, these universities, and very often there are a number of different challenges that you're going to be confronted with. And so the title I was given for this evening was Keeping the Faith on Campus. And that can relate to both whether one's at a high school or whether one finds oneself at a university. So by show of hands, then, how many of you folks here are planning on going to college in the future? Okay, that's everybody. And who wants to become an engineer? We have one here. What other professions are you interested in? What about you young ladies? What professions would you be interested in? Have you figured it out yet? Because if you haven't, that's okay.
Nursing,
there we go. If we have anybody who wants to get involved, any of the guys want to be involved in medicine or that kind of stuff? Okay. Well, that's okay. You have some plan. If you haven't figured out what you want to do yet, that's just fine. I wasn't quite sure myself. My training is in land surveying, so my background is in construction. And that's what I ended up going to do to study at college. So in order to talk about keeping the faith on campus, we wanted to talk first and foremost about what is the faith, okay? And the reason I ask this question is we have to know what faith is before we can know whether it is worth keeping, okay? Like many things, when you say, I have faith, that can mean many things to many different people. And as Christians, we really want to understand what we mean by faith. It is often taken for granted amongst Christians that we all understand each other when we talk about we'll speak about our faith. But if you scratch a little bit deeper, you'll soon find out that some Christians understand by faith, and what others mean by faith are two very different things. So the question is this then, what is biblical faith? The faith that you and I ought to be interested in is the faith of which the Bible is speaking. It's the historic Christian faith, okay? And we're going to look at that this evening. Right, in the first slide I have purposefully put forward two verses. This is the other PowerPoint. This is the. Have you got the Keeping the Faith on Campus PowerPoint? Sorry, we just got the wrong PowerPoint up here now. This is a talk for later this evening. Yeah, there we go. Brilliant. Thanks, John. Okay, so I put up these two verses because we can see there's some tension here. The first verse. It's in Hebrews 11, chapter 1. This is a very famous verse, and when people talk about faith, this is often the very first verse they go to. And this is what the verse says, and our faith has been sure of what we hope for, and certain of what we do not see. Okay? And then we have this other statement here from Luke. Luke is the author of both the Gospel of Luke and the Book of Acts. Okay? Those are like the history books of the New Testament. Right? And he says this, therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also to me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. Okay? Well, this is interesting now because we seem to have some tension here. Okay? A lot of people understand this verse to be that we don't need to be certain of things, we just need to have faith. And what is Luke suggesting here? That he's writing his gospel so that you and I might be certain. So at first reading, it appears like we've got some kind of contradiction or some problem going on here. And I want you to keep that in mind, though, because we're going to try and solve this problem this evening. And how we solve this problem is by correctly understanding what biblical faith is. Okay? So there was purposes. So in order for us to do that, I'm going to deploy technology, okay? Now, thankfully, I've got guys to help me with technology, because if I have to be involved with technology, usually something is going to burn down, something's going to catch on fire, people are going to get into trouble and that kind of thing. So I've got some gentlemen to help me now. We've got a few clips here of a whole slew of different people. The first is a bunch of clips from a university campus in North Carolina. This is just ordinary folks talking about faith. Then we're going to get to see what Hollywood thinks of faith. And we're going to look at a whole bunch of other different people to see what are they talking about when they talk about faith. So let's run that first clip. Listen very carefully to what these folks are saying faith is.
Yeah, faith is the hard word to describe. I would say it's more than emotion.
Emotion?
When it comes to, an object or a thing. We're talking about religion.
Do you think that has anything to do with faith, that is? Do you think it has anything to do with the reason and the intellect when it comes to this matter?
No.
No? Okay. How would you define faith?
An intense belief, not based on reason.
Catch some of that? So faith is an emotion. You know, faith isn't grounded in reason. You even hear Bill Maher, who's a very well-known, media kind of person. Is that correct? So very interesting. These are interviews with people on campus, and I just want you to pay attention to what they think faith is. So I don't know what our next clip is. We can run the next clip. This is a scene from the movie The Bucket List with Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman.
It's indescribably beautiful. No fire under the polar cap. Lovely desolation. The stars. It's really one of God's goodness. So you think a being some sort did all this. You don't? You mean, do I believe if I look up in the sky and promise this or that, make all this go away. No.
And that upset the people on Earth at home.
Life is taught me anything is that 95% of the people are always wrong.
It's called faith.
I honestly envy people who have faith. I just can't get my head around it.
Maybe your head's in the way.
Carl, Google had hundreds of these discussions, and every one of them always hits the same wall. Is there a sugar plum fairy or not? And nobody has ever gotten over that wall.
So, what do you believe?
I resist all beliefs.
No Big Bang, random universe.
We live, we die, and the wheels on the bus go round and round.
So what if you're wrong?
I love to be wrong. If I'm wrong, I win.
I'm sure it works that way.
Oh, you're not claiming you know something I don't.
I just have faith.
Okay. Did you catch some of that dialogue there between what are some of the things that you picked up from there? Did you notice anything? Any commentary on that clip at all? It's interesting, hey. Here you've got a man, they're on an aircraft having a discussion about what faith is, and Jack Nicholson is a skeptic and Morgan Freeman is this, and you know, he says, I just have faith. What's interesting, there's a moment there where Morgan Freeman, if he was a Christian, starts talking about some interesting things. He talks about, you know, random universe, and I'm like, well, he had a suggestion that he could have taken that somewhere, but he just defaults to this faith. Well, it's just I just have faith. I just believe these things. That's Hollywood's view of faith. So now we've looked at some students at a university campus. We've heard from Bill Maher. He thinks that people who have faith that they're irrational. That one lady said that they're stupid. Okay. And that's the culture. This is the cultural view of faith. Let's run the next video.
It was not a decision I made with my head. It wasn't. That was what was so odd about it, was that I was raised in academia. Everything made sense. I studied. I was a math brain, a science brain. Everything had to make sense. And this was the first time in my life that I was making the biggest decision I had ever made, based on something that I didn't feel that I could or had to prove on paper. I knew that God told me this was true. I knew that I read the Book of Mormon and that I had prayed and that I had done everything the missionaries told me to do, and that I, without any question, knew that this 14-year-old boy in New York, Joseph Smith, was actually a prophet of God, and that the Book of Mormon was actually the Word of God, and that the truth had been restored. And I couldn't prove it. I didn't have any proof, and so it wasn't anything that was logical. To ask me what I was thinking, I wasn't thinking. I was feeling. And I hadn't ever really been in touch with my emotions before, and didn't realize how much more powerful that would be.
Jennifer and her husband recently moved to the Los Angeles area to Utah.
Wow, interesting. Now, usually when you run that clip, before you get to the part where this lady, she says, when I read the Book of Mormon, most people think, oh yeah, I resonate with that as Christians. She sounds like an evangelical woman talking about her faith. What are some of the things that she said? It's not about logic, it's not about reason, it's not about thinking, it's about abandoning your mind, and that's what faith is. That's Mormons and many of the cults. Many of the other religious movements out there, that's their view of faith. It has nothing to do with your intellect or your mind. Is that the biblical view of faith? Well, we're going to look at that. Now, let's run the next clip.
There are two sons. She is a casting director for feature films. She was baptized into the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on August 22nd, 1993.
Okay, This is a famous clip from a movie, Indiana Jones. It might be a bit old for you. Who's watched Indiana Jones here? Right. Well-known clip of Indiana Jones. It's here again. It's Hollywood's view of faith. This blind leap, you know. I have no evidence to suggest that there's a bridge there, so I'm just going to have faith and just believe it, and the bridge appears. Again, Hollywood's view of faith. Now, this I'm indebted to a friend of mine who gathered some of these clips together, and I sort of borrowed them from him. But as I was going through some of these videos, I found exactly the same Indiana Jones section out of that movie with some Christians who have done me a great favor of adding scriptural verses and some Jeremy Camp Christian music to that very clip, because that's what Christians think biblical faith is. So let's run that clip now and look for the verses. Hebrews 11:1. Well, these videos hopefully serve to demonstrate to you that there are a lot of people who have various views of faith, including Hollywood, the culture, folks on campus, the media, and even Christians, who, in this instance, and I would submit to you that probably the vast majority of Christians that I are in the churches today think that that's what faith is. When they wouldn't, if you play that video, it would resonate in the churches. That's what they think it is. They think it's this abandonment of the mind and this leap of faith. The question is that biblical faith? Okay? Because the talk that we're going to do this evening is about how to defend our faith on campus. We need to know what faith is. Because I can't help you defend that. If that's what you think faith is, I'm of no help to you. Because it's not the kind of thing that can be defended. I can marshal no arguments. I can point to no evidence to suggest to you that it's something to be held on to. It really comes down to, if that's what faith is, down to you're some kind of emotional encounter or experience. And either you have it or you don't. I cannot help you defend that. Okay? This is very, very important because when you guys are in school or you're in campus and you start getting your faith is challenged, you're going to have to think through what this is. And you're going to see and hopefully be encouraged that this isn't where the scriptures leave us. This isn't what Christianity teaches. Okay? Let's just run the next slide here. Okay? This is what some folks would think that faith is. That I have the Hebrews 11:1 verse above it, and it says, a lot of folks think that faith is belief in spite of, or perhaps because of, the lack of evidence. Okay? I came across this quote, and this quote is from the most famous atheist in the world, a guy by the name of Richard Dawkins. Okay? That's the link. This is a lecture that he gave. This is what a lot of professors that you're going to study at universities think that Christian faith is. This is the quote. Faith isn't belief in spite of it. The faith is a great cop-out, a great excuse to evade and the need to think and evaluate evidence. That's what most universities think Christian faith is. And so we've had a really broad spectrum now of viewing what the culture thinks faith is. Okay. Now, we don't want to be guilty of the genetic fallacy now, okay? What is the genetic fallacy? The genetic fallacy is saying that somebody is wrong because we don't like them, or whatever the case is, okay? I could be a grumpy, miserable old man that nobody wants to talk to, and if I believe something was true, whether you like me or not, that wouldn't change whether what I believed was true or not, okay? So it might be the case that Richard Dawkins and these other people are correct, we want to find out what faith is. So we need to address this verse in Hebrews 11:1. And there's a few things that we can say about this passage. This verse is speaking about certainty and assurance. But we have to look at the following verses. That is, we have to look at the context of the other verses to see whether the certainty and assurance is reasonable. Notice this. Failing to see something does not mean that we don't have any evidence for that thing. There's a lot of things that we know and believe that we don't see in this life. We believe in the laws of logic. Okay? If I said that this young man over here who has red hair, that he has both red hair and black hair at the same time and in the same sense, there's a problem with that. There's a contradiction. Okay? The laws of logic govern everything that we communicate with. They're the foundational principles of thinking and rationality and our interaction with the real world. You know, either there's a snake in my bed or there isn't a snake in the bed. There can't both be one in the bed and out of the bed at the same time and in the same sense. But the laws of logic aren't the kinds of things that can be seen. Okay? What about moral laws? When your parent says, you ought not do that. Okay? Like you ought not drive your dad's car 150 miles an hour down the local farm roads because you might run into a John Deere and that's going to lead to a problem. Okay? Those kinds of things, moral things, aren't physical things. You ought not do that. But those things are as real as the trees outside. We live our lives. Our lives are governed by moral precepts, moral demands. Okay? So there's many things. Most of what we see in reality, we don't see reality to its fullest extent. We don't see down to a subatomic level. We don't see particles and atoms in motion. We can't see that. Our faculties don't permit us to have access to that level of reality. Yet we believe it on the basis of what? The scientists tell us that this is when you start breaking things down, that this is what builds up material things. In fact, we take uranium and we put it into these power stations, and you go home and you flick on the electricity because somewhere on the line, at some subatomic level, we're got nuclear physics going on. We believe it though. So a lot of what we believe is also on the basis of authority, and there's no problems with that, you know. We believe a lot of things on the basis of eyewitness testimony. This is very significant. This is very significant when it comes to the scriptures, because a lot of what we believe about Jesus and his life is based on eyewitness testimony. So suppose I was in Africa. I'd never visited the United States, and I lived in the bush, and I didn't have watch television or read magazines. And this guy here with the green athletics jacket, what is your name, sir? The red one, sorry.
Mark.
Mark came to me and said, "Hey, Simon, I was in New York a couple of years ago, and these guys flew these airplanes into these buildings. These huge, big skyscrapers, and these buildings collapsed, and thousands of people died." And I thought, "Well, that's a bit crazy. I mean, that sounds like that comes out of some kind of, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. I don't really believe that." He said, "Well, you know, here's some pictures that you can look at." I said, "Well, you know, I'm not a tech guy, but I know that you can Photoshop anything, and you could have probably got that out of some movie clip where they've got special effects. Why? How do I really know that that happened?" And then Mark said to me, "Okay, well, you're going to be the skeptic with me. You're going to play skeptic with me. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's an air ticket. I want you to fly from Johannesburg up to the airport up in New York, and then you're going to go to Manhattan Island, and you're going to walk down to the bottom of Manhattan Island, and I want you to start talking to people." Well, inevitably, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Who am I going to bump into?
A witness.
You see? Now, if I bumped into somebody who was very sane and said, "Yeah, I was actually like running away and looked over my shoulder and watched those buildings come down," would it be unreasonable for me to say, "Wow, oh, I don't know about that"? No, we wouldn't think that. We think, no, that's reasonable. That's the kind of testimony we have in scriptures. We have reliable, honest people telling us about the truth of the life and testimony of Jesus Christ. We do this with everything in our lives. So just because we don't see something physically doesn't mean there isn't good reasons for believing it. Okay? We will find in the Bible that there are many, many passages which talk about the eyewitnesses' testimony of Jesus Christ. You've got, if you read through the New Testament, the Bible is full of instances when you'll see people talking about, "We were eyewitnesses to these events. We walked with Jesus. We ate with him. We touched him." Okay? This is very significant. 1 John chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. 2 Peter 1, 16. 1 Corinthians 15. Acts. The entire book of Acts is talking, is full of this stuff. Acts 3 verse 11, Acts 4:20, Acts 10:39. So if biblical faith was the kind of faith in which we believe in something despite the evidence, then why have the people who wrote the Bibles spend a lot of time telling us we were eyewitnesses to this thing? If faith was just believing without any evidence, why were they wasting their time writing documents talking about their eyewitness testimony to these events? Mainly because that's not what biblical faith is. Maybe biblical faith is something that has something to do with your reason and your intellect. That you have good reasons for believing that God exists. You have good reasons for believing that Jesus existed as a historic person. And you have good reasons for your faith. In fact, this is exactly what Paul says in Acts chapter 26. He says, when he's giving his defense, he says to Festus and Agrippa, these people who are he's talking to, he says, "These things are true and reasonable." He doesn't say to them, "Oh, you've got to have faith. You've got to have this blind faith and just believe it." Okay? There's a confusion that's going on here. And I think when people say, well, if you have this kind of faith, then what about things that you don't know about? And I think we need to make a distinction here. When I say that I have faith in God, I have reasons for belief in God, okay? It's one thing having God as the object of my faith and I have trust or faith in Him, okay? It's another thing when you say to me, well, what do you think is going to happen next year? Okay? Like, for example, I'm going to be going back to Africa to work in Africa. And I can't tell you what's going to happen there. I don't think anybody here could tell me what's going to happen there. Yet I have faith in God that things will be okay. Alright? Notice the difference here. Having faith in God is where my assurance and certainty is, okay? And the reason why I can have confidence in the future is not because I know the future, it's because I know God. That's the difference. So there's many things that I'm not sure of, okay? But I have lots of reasons for believing that God exists and that Jesus is who He claimed to be on the basis of the testimony of the Bible and on historic events and for the existence of God on the basis of creation. The Bible says as much. And so you need to be careful sometimes we make this distinction then between having faith in God and then also trusting in the future for future events that we don't know of. Okay. If you look at Hebrews, the rest of the context of Hebrews 11, you'll see that this passage goes on to mention many people who are considered to be examples of men and women of faith. And all of these had ample evidence in their lives to believe that God existed and that He is trustworthy. Indeed, it was unreasonable not to trust in God. If you read Hebrews, if you go to Hebrews chapter 11, I'm just going to read that verse for you there. Okay, because if you get into discussions on faith, people are going to talk, go to this verse. Verse 17 through 19, it says, by faith Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could raise him from the dead. And figuratively speaking, he received Isaac back from the dead. What? Abraham did what? He reasoned. He was a reasonable man. He understood the character of God, and he knew that God was asking him to do something difficult, but because of his assurance in the nature of God, you're thinking, well, hang on a second, if I have to go through for this, God must be up to something, so I'm going to be faithful to what He's asked me to do, because I know His character. Okay? So in the same context, the verse uses the word reason, okay, which means that if we think that faith does not have any evidence, that view of faith is simply false. Okay? One of my favorite passages in the entire Bible is John chapter 10, verse 37. In the Gospel of John, Jesus is confronted with the Pharisees, okay? And the Pharisees keep on asking Jesus the question, who are you? Who do you claim to be? And nobody wanted to believe who He claimed to be. They weren't interested in finding out who He was. Okay? And in this particular passage here, listen to what happens. He says, as He's confronting the Pharisees, picking up in verse 37, He says, do not believe me unless I do what my Father does. But if I do it, even though you do not believe me, believe the miracles that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I am in the Father. In this account, the Pharisees have been confronting Jesus over and over again, asking, who are you? Who are you? And in this instance, He gets to a position where He eventually says to the Pharisees, He says, you know, you don't believe me or my words. But here's a person now he performs a miracle in front of them. Okay? This is very significant because the Greeks look for wisdom and the Jews look for signs and wonders. The reason why God performs miracles, okay, is to substantiate His message and distinguish it from those of people. Okay? Suppose this man here with the brown shirt just fell over and died. Okay? What's your name? You had a big bug and you died for it. Okay? And you're all going, wow, that's crazy. Okay? And then I walk in here, a complete stranger, and I say, Corey, get up. But we all know that he was there, okay? We've been here for about a week of camping, he'd been dead for a week, just didn't know before, okay?
We didn't know that he's stone dead. And I said, get up for him. And then I said to you, I've got a message from the Lord for you. Does that change things? Yeah, you would suddenly think, gee whiz, if this guy has this kind of authority, maybe I should listen to what he has to say. That's precisely the kind of reason why the early apostles were given this ability to perform miracles, was to separate the message. Because if I came in here, like you said, you need to hear me, I've heard from God. And you're going to think, well, maybe he's just a crazy guy, because a lot of people claim to hear from God. Why should we listen to Simon? If I perform the miracle in front of you, that might change your opinion on the matter. So Jesus is in front of the Pharisees, who keep on saying, who are you, who are you? He says, look, I'm telling you who I am. You don't believe me, so here's a miracle. He has them now in a state of conflict. Because as Jews, they know this. They know that if a miracle is performed, God is speaking to them. And they should arrive at the correct conclusion. Jesus is using logic here. He's using logic. He's using his reason with these people. So people will say this thing. Well, if you have faith, if this is what faith is, that you just know everything, then what is the need for faith? You know, you have answers to everything. I've heard this critic come up and say, you know, where is there room for faith if you know everything? Well, if you think about it, that objection begs the question. Okay? It assumes what it sets out to prove. It's assuming that that's what faith is. That faith is the kind of thing that's not based on reason. And what I want to make clear here is I'm not saying that I know everything. Okay? I don't profess to know that. Christianity doesn't place a demand on anybody that you have to know everything. What it does say is that you should have assurance and confidence in God because God has made it evident to all men that He exists. So I need to have confidence in my faith. Why? Because when I walk outside and I see this beautiful countryside you live in, I don't think to myself, gee whiz, this all just happened by random chance processes. I don't think that. That's not a reasonable conclusion. And we ought not to buy into that concept of faith, because if you get to college, what people are going to do is they're going to attack you. And if you say, well, my faith just doesn't have anything to do with evidence, they're going to say, yeah. And that's exactly what we thought it was. So guess what you are? You're a dunce. You're stupid. You're dark. You're irrational. You might as well not even have a brain. We want to talk to educated people. And people, some of these Christians happily go on their way. Now, when I work at university campuses, anywhere between, I don't know what the statistics are now, it's crazy, between 60 to 80% of the people who go to colleges lose their faith. Which means that if you young people went to college, then maybe just these four folks here would remain Christians. The rest of you would become non-Christians. And a lot of the reason why that happens is because of the challenges that come up at colleges then. Okay. So, what I want to talk about this evening, when you head off to college, okay, or you're in high school, in light of what we've discussed about what faith is and what it isn't, okay, there's a number of things that are going to challenge your faith. Okay. This is the number one thing that's going to challenge your faith. And I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I promise you, I suspect this church that the people who lead you talk to you quite a lot about this kind of stuff. That is the moral challenges. Your character. Your lifestyle. Okay? Your life should be such so that it should provoke people to ask you why you live like you do. This is, you know, you've heard this in your story. You talk about being, you know, a lamp on a hill, a light for people. Your life should be such that people go, gee whiz, you know, that guy, whilst everybody else is out there cursing and swearing, this guy speaks with respect to people. You know, he's humble. He doesn't take himself too seriously. There's nothing more annoying than a person who takes himself seriously. Way too seriously. Look, I know that sometimes people are awesome, but in the grand scheme of things, the only truly awesome being is God. You know? And we live in a culture, particularly amongst the youth, where there's this, particularly here in America, unfortunately I've come across this kind of narcissism. Do you know what narcissism is? Okay, who was Narcissus? This comes from Greek mythology. Who was Narcissus? He was this guy who was so beautiful and handsome, okay? And all the girls wanted to date him. And everybody was enamored with him. But he was so handsome that he was so full of himself. He would go and stare into these ponds and look at his own reflection and be enamored with his own reflection. That he ended up dying on the pond, at the edge of the pond, because he couldn't take himself away from his own image. This is Greek mythology. It's where the word narcissism comes from. And what I find is happening in America, unfortunately, is a lot of young Americans think that they're really interesting. And they're also consumed with their own belly buttons, thinking, wow, check how cool I am. Look, please don't be like that. Okay? Please don't be like that. That is a very, very boring place to be. The universe and God is an awesome place for you to explore. And the great place to begin with that is to have a pretty sobering view of yourself. Okay? This is important. Lifestyle and character is very, because on college campuses, this is always happening, peer pressure. You can have peer pressure of guys and girls for various things. You need to be like this, you need to live like this, you need to have your hair like that. I'm past it, now my hair's falling out, I'm done with hairstyles, okay? There's going to be all this pressure. He's athletic, he's non-athletic. You know, he's cool, he's not cool. He has these skills, he has those skills. You know? He's got a 52 vertical inch jump, you know? And he's got a 4.78 GPA, whatever that is. You know? Look here, none of that's going to impress Jesus Christ. I'd rather have a bunch of, you know, humble people who don't take themselves too seriously than some athletes who are often on misfits, okay? Or some guys who are trying to pretend to be Mr. Smarty Pants because he's read a few books. That we would have some young men and women that love Jesus and are sincere and truthful and honest and love their parents and live such that people are like, wow, that's the kind of person I like. They look at their own lives and they see how bankrupt their lives is and they go, man, I want to talk to this person. Why? Because they don't live like everybody. Living like a Christian is the radical way. It is the radical thing to do. It's why people will go after you. So this is very important. Be careful who you surround yourself with. You probably know this already. You probably heard this taught here you might want to shuffle across from that lady there on the left there. I saw that right over there. Yes. So this verse, the Bible talks about this. Do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. Okay? Be careful of who you hang out with. I used to hang out with some guys when I was at college, and it didn't work out too well for me. I found myself in bars and on the sides of streets full of alcohol and drunk and in the back of police vehicles. Okay? Because I hung around bad company. So I speak from experience here. Don't do that. At the same time, we don't want to become isolationists, okay? And then go and form some kind of monastery on university, because we have to strike this balance. Because if we were to remove ourselves from bad company in this world, we would have to leave the planet. Because everybody is a sinner. And so we have to, there's some balance to understanding what the scriptures are saying here. We have to be mindful of the company we keep, but at the same time, we have to reach out to a lot of people who are lost, who don't know about the Christian faith. We've got questions, or maybe they don't have questions, and maybe you want to talk to them such that they might be provoked to thinking a bit about the way they live their lives, or what they believe in, to find an opportunity for you to share the gospel with them, to share your faith with them, in a way that's both true and reasonable, like we've just learned today. Not the Hollywood brand of faith, not Bill Maher's view of faith, not Jack Nicholson or Morgan Freeman's view of faith, not the Mormon view of faith, and unfortunately not what a lot of Christians think faith is. Okay. So this is very, very, these things are very important, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of you will have your pastors and leadership, and they'll talk to you a lot about this. Remember, going into the university needs to be an opportunity for missions. A lot of parents are concerned about their kids losing their faith. It would be a pretty radical state of affairs if the church and adults and young people were equipped such that when we went to college, we weren't fearful of the ideological battle going on there. We were actually excited about the prospects that my son and daughter will go into these places and share the gospel with confidence. Right now, I've been to events where they have like these open days for American Christian parents, okay? And you can see the fear on the faces of the adults. Walking from one college to the next, you just think, well, I hope Jimmy survives at college. I hope his faith survives at college. I have had so many conversations with parents whose kids have gone off to university, and they said to me, I spent $80,000 or whatever getting a four-year degree for my son or my daughter, and they no longer share my faith. I remember seeing this one guy off now. The guy was 6'7". He burst into tears because he sent his daughter to NC State. She's no longer a believer. Look, this is happening all over that place. It shouldn't happen to you. You're fortunate to be in a church that you're even having this kind of event. A lot of churches don't care about apologetics. They don't care about thinking a little bit more deeply about what faith is. And then when they go out to the universities, it's like I take this guy in the red shirt and I put handcuffs in him, and then I put him into a boxing ring with a guy and say, well, go for it, you know. He's trying to fight with his chin. We've handcuffed a lot of our young people because we haven't trained them to defend themselves. We haven't trained you how to put on the spiritual armor that God says we need. The helmet. The helmet of salvation. What is a helmet in warfare? What does a helmet do? What does a helmet do? What is the purpose of a helmet in warfare? To protect your pumpkin, okay? From when a guy hits it with an axe or something. That's what a helmet is for. Well, spiritually, what is a helmet doing? It's protecting your mind from ideas. But showing up at the university with a big piece of tin on your head, you're going to look like an idiot. But that's not what Paul is getting at. The biggest challenge we're dealing with on campus is an ideological battle. It's a battle of ideas. It's a contest between the ideas of Christianity and the ideas of every other ism out there. And if you don't know how to navigate those things, very often, your faith is going to be undermined. And most certainly, you're not going to have anything to say to those people who don't agree with you. So this is why it's important that we have the correct view of biblical faith, okay? That we have a place, an environment where we love God with both our hearts and our minds. And that we're not fearful of these places anymore. Wouldn't that be a refreshing state of affairs? That the church is no longer afraid of the universities. You know, the Christianity started most of the universities in the first, I think the first 150 universities in this country were started by Christians. And we don't have any voice at those schools anymore. All the Ivy League schools in this country were started by Christians. Where is the Christian voice in those institutions? There is none. And I would submit to you the reason why there's no more voice is because there's been an atrophy of the Christian mind. What is an atrophy? Basically, the Christian mind has become diseased and feeble. It can no longer stand up to the onslaught of the ideas in high schools. Evolution, you know. Moral relativism. What's true for you is true for you. What's true for me is true for me. That's the philosophy which governs the university. You know, all religions teach basically the same thing. You know, well, we're all just going to get to heaven. Why? Because we're all basically good people. You know, or you Christians are so arrogant, you already think that you've got the truth. How arrogant of you. This is the culture you live in, folks. This is what people say. And I don't doubt for a second that if I was to sit down and have a conversation with you, you probably had conversations with some of your friends. Some of them are not Christians, maybe some of them are. Or you're going to have conversations with not just some of your friends, maybe, but maybe some of your family members who aren't Christians. I've got quite a few family members who aren't believers. And so it's important to me that I furnish my mind with truth so that I can talk to them in a meaningful way. Okay, we have a few minutes left now. And I wanted to see if there were any questions you might have for me about keeping the faith on campus. For those of you going off to college, who's heading off to college next year? Anyone here? Who's the final year of high school? Yes. That's a fine beard.
Same question.
No, who's heading off to college next year? Or where are you going to study?
Electrical engineering.
Which school are you going to? Okay. I'm involved with a campus ministry called Ratio Christi. Okay? And it started a couple of years ago at the seminary. We're now at 170 universities in the United States. And the reason why we ended up with all of these university chapters is not because we had a lot of money or some big, you know, celebrity Christian to help us. We don't have Billy Graham driving the thing or one of these famous Christians. It's a bunch of college Christian students who came to us and said, you know, we're tired of being on campus here because a lot of campus ministries have reduced Christianity to strumming guitars and eating pizza once a week. Okay? That's not going to help you. Okay? There is the riches of the Christian faith in terms of the reasonableness of it, the ideas are so profound, so as to change you. A radical transformation of the mind. Romans 12:2. Paul talks about this. He says that we should offer ourselves up as vessels for God's service. And one of the ways that we do that is we allow ourselves not only to have transformed hearts, hearts that become flesh, from hearts of stone to hearts of flesh, hearts of compassion, hearts of love, hearts of caring, generosity, all those kinds of things, but then we also become people whose minds become alive. That's very important. The transformation of the Christian mind. Any questions? Since nobody likes to ask the first question, we'll move to the second question then. You see, I know that their wheels are spinning in their minds over there. I can see that. So here's what's going to happen then. If you have any questions, I'm going to be here for the weekend. You can come up to me anytime and ask me. Or if you don't want to talk to me, maybe because I'm bald and ugly, you can talk to my wife. Okay? She's very gracious. You can feel free to ask me. You can also ask Uncle Ray downstairs, the guy behind the book table. Okay? I'll be ready. It would be a privilege for me to hear from you if you've got a question about what you think Christianity is. Or maybe you've got a friend and you're like, I don't know what they believe. They've got this idea. I don't understand it. Or maybe there's something in the Bible that bothers you, a particular verse or passage. What do you think about that? What's your opinion on that? That's what we had to do this weekend, is to stimulate you into thinking for the Lord. Thank you very much.